But then I'll say, Mr. Man, what's your name? Whatever, what will your pleasure be? Let me take your order, I'll jot it down. You ain't never had a friend like me. Life is your restaurant, and I'm your maitre d'. Come whisper to me whatever it is you want. You ain't never had a friend like me. We pride ourselves on...
Greetings, friends, and to all who come to this happy place, welcome. It's me, Matt G, and this is Think Drink Disney. It's here where we imagineer the destination fantasy bars of the future based on a Disney theme, but not before we dive deep into the film at hand. So let's bring out the man who has something in common with Aladdin. He takes a poo everywhere he goes. Welcome back to the show, Lance.
Gotta mark my territory. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. We're about to do from episode 1 to episode 47.
Yes.
It's time to talk about, finally, the lesser of the two Aladdins.
Oh, I think that's a little divisive.
I just want to get that out of the way. Obviously, you know I'm a big fan of the original. My 1992 classic will always stand as nostalgic in my memory as the best Disney film ever made.
Yeah, that's why we did it as episode 1, our inaugural episode.
That's true.
Was Aladdin
before we knew any better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Before we got, we really stepped into our stride.
Yeah,
before we have a stride. Before we learn some new tricks. And
yeah, I'm excited to talk about this because how many times have I had a chance to say it to you? The more I watch it, the more I like it. And it seems like this is just another one of those movies I should just listen to Matt and just be like, you know what, let's get another shot. And sure enough, it is memorable and it's great.
I agree.
It's great in so many different ways. It's just a different version of an incredible classic Disney tale.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I absolutely love this film. I loved the original. Don't get me wrong. It's one of my all-time favorites. But the 2019 remake was absolutely incredible. So without any further ado, let's dive into the digits for this film. The movie that we are reviewing today is the 2019 musical fantasy film live-action remake version of Aladdin, released on May 24th. It was the 222nd film released by Walt Disney Pictures. It was preceded by Penguins on April 17th of the same year. Not sure if you're 100% familiar with that.
No, not even. not even a little bit.
A ton of people are, but that's fine. It was followed by Toy Story 4, which I'm sure everybody knows.
No, I never heard of that one either.
On June 24th of the exact same year. Aladdin was the 14th live-action remake by Walt Disney Pictures. Who knew they had done so many by this point?
Wow. So what was the first? So what was 101 Dalmatians? Would that be the first one or
the
no?
The Jungle Book.
The Jungle Book.
Yeah.
Like the Rudyard Kipling one?
Yeah.
Is this, okay, is this the one that I thought was the guy from Mortal Kombat?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you
thought it was
guy.
Robin Chu. And
yes, Jason Lee.
Jason Lee, thank you. But yeah, not the same guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Jungle Book was the very first one. I'm not going to list them all off because we're already on number 14. It was preceded by number 13, which was Dumbo, which was released in March of same year.
Yeah, Tim Burton.
And it was followed by The Lion King, released in July of the exact same year. Apparently, they were on kind of a live-action remake tear in 2019. This film was based on the Disney animated classic Aladdin from 1992, which was based on Aladdin and the Wonderful Lamp, a tale from 1001 Nights.
That's right, yeah.
Or in English, Arabian Nights.
Yes, Sinbad, Tale of Sinbad.
Yes,
right?
All of those things, yep. This movie didn't really have the chance to inspire any prequels, sequels, or spinoffs because it was just made, like 5 years ago. Although, I've heard rumors.
About a Aladdin 2?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, all the ideas that they've had for quite some time. There was a Prince Anders spinoff.
Okay, that would be kind of funny.
It was supposed to be for Disney Plus that was announced in 2019 when this movie came out because it was so popular. And it's just been stuck in production hell ever since. There is a possible live-action sequel set to be directed by Guy Ritchie, still starring Naomi Scott, Mina Massoud, and Will Smith.
Return of Jafar, maybe?
But, here's the thing. That's kind of what we were thinking, that it would be based on Return of Jafar and King of Thieves.
Mm-hmm,
that was the two animated sequels.
Yeah.
And they have said that they might take elements from those, but it's going to be a completely original story. Wow. And then the whole Oscars thing happened, and it just kind of, nobody talked about it anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows what I'm talking about?
The slap heard around the world.
Yeah, exactly. I think the most exciting thing was there was a prequel titled Genies that was announced in 2015, and that was ultimately scrapped, but that would have gone into the backstory of where Genie came from, the whole Genie species. I don't know if they're species.
For sure they are, wouldn't you think? Yeah.
The whole Genie genre and where they came from, how he got to be trapped in the lamp, and like just a very Genie-centric story.
Yeah, the mythology of Genies themselves. I think that'd be such a cool thing to do.
Yeah, the whole Jinn history in Arabic culture, that would have been fun to explore.
Yeah, I would definitely find that extremely interesting.
Me too. That's a bummer they didn't make that one. This movie was not nominated for any Academy Awards, Golden Globes, or Grammys. Not a single one.
Yeah.
which is a bummer because the original one was nominated for all three.
It's surprising the Grammys because of Naomi Scott's standalone song.
Yeah.
Which was incredible. And I think arguably one of the best additions. Well, among some of the only additions that I really kind of like to think of the live action, you know, respectfully.
Yeah.
But it was such a great addition because it really kind of gave her a voice.
Yeah.
And it avoided any stereotypical tropes of like the, you know, she has to be rescued by a man or, you know, women can't be assaulted and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it really did just expound on that idea.
A modernized kind of version of it.
Yeah, Speechless was a great song, too.
Oh, it's incredible.
It was a good enough song. It should have gotten at least nominated for something. The original, the 92 version, won 2 Oscars. It was nominated for 5. It won 3 Golden Globes. It was nominated for 6. And it won 5 of the 8 Grammys it was nominated for.
Wow.
I know. This movie got none of that love. It was nominated for 9 Saturn Awards. Wow. and a bunch of other ones, too. But it just, didn't get a whole lot of award love there. The 2019 live-action version of Aladdin had a budget of $183 million, and it ended up with a worldwide box office of $1.05 billion.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy when you think about this came out in 2019, the pandemic happened in 2020. So I'm not saying all of the viewers, but there has to be a good chunk of people just on Disney Plus.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Watching it for the first time, literally getting their subscriptions just so they could watch this movie.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It's funny you should mention the pandemic because that happened in, what, March, I think, of 2020?
That's when the shutdown was.
And the shutdown did. Yeah, exactly. And this movie drew in an added $345 million from home entertainment and TV that you can add onto the total. So you could say it made almost $1.4 billion.
So essentially one third of its entire box office gross was from people downloading it or streaming it.
Which is the only way they could do it from that point on.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Aladdin was the 8th highest grossing film of 2019. 2019 was a big year, man.
Wow.
Number one came in at Avengers Endgame.
That makes sense.
There was also the live-action Lion King. The Rise of Skywalker came out that year.
Wow.
Frozen 2, Toy Story 4, which I mentioned earlier, Captain Marvel, Spider-Man Far From Home. Like, there were a lot of bangers that year.
That's crazy.
I know, right? So, it's not surprising that it made that much money, but the fact that it fell in at number 8 is kind of shocking.
Seems like that billion-dollar mark isn't so difficult to reach anymore.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know? It's just pennies.
Yeah.
Pennies for these studios.
Inflation is real, ladies and gentlemen. Fuck.
So I think that's about all of the hard numbers that I have for this movie. You want to talk about the plot for a minute? Do you want to talk about the plot? Would you like me to talk about the plot for a minute?
Yeah, as you see it. Now, this is kind of cool because we didn't start doing the as you see it. It's like, what was it? 101 Dalmatians? Or
101 Peter? Dalmatians,
was that
I
the first time we did it?
That was the first time first I tried time, it.
First time you did it, I mean. Like, yeah. I'm just a listener like you guys are. I'm an innocent bystander. Just, you know, it's because we didn't do it in the first episode. Now, this is a revisit to the original, and it's just your opportunity to talk about Aladdin, but just in a different light.
I've always kind of wanted to go back and do a re-edit of some of the episodes. I'm not going to, everybody.
That could be fun.
But just like
Tron, as you see it. Holy shit, that could be fucking really bad.
Yeah, add like the as I see it. And add like intro music and fun stitching and like all the fun little things that we've slowly added to the episodes over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And just kind of make them a little bit more modernized. I'm not going to because they should just be original.
Yeah, they're peer in their own right.
Yeah, exactly.
And it gives the listeners an available chance to kind of see us grow the way that we've grown.
Yeah, the little bits that we've grown. So Aladdin as I see it, well, let me put it this way. The 2019 live action Aladdin as I see it, Will Smirner sings the exposition song to some ginger gardeners about Game of Lamps. Hindi Robin Hood shows off his wicked parkour skills trying to impress a princess in disguise. Brief thief musical interlude followed by princess power ballad because Grammys or lack thereof. A boy and his monkey do some B&E to make a silky smooth pass at the princess but get caught by the curry guard while the royal kitty is getting washed. Giggity. Prince of Thieves is brought to solo entry Sandcastle Tiger and uses his parkour skills again to play the floor as lava before wishing not wishing his way out of Mustafar and into a song about his fabulous new Kardashian lifestyle. Foot meets mouth and floaty smurf Geppetto's Prince Pauper through an awkward mating dance while he tries to score some Handmaiden's Tale. Unsighted UFC, that's unidentified flying carpet, drowning danger, foiled by unnecessary wish, and Cobra Kai Rack gets his staff broken. Robin Sayoud goes back on his promise, so Blueberry Cloud goes back to his brass dorm, and Alan Two Dickhead Bird frees Taj Mahalik from prison so he can use his OG hood skills to nick the wishing brass away from fake Prince. Very survivable Bond villain exile death for Protaga Thief, a little family 50 Shades of Grey, and our hero returns to use his mental magic to defeat a jolly red giant. Villain with a teenager's voice gets vacuumed into an antique shop trinket along with Jurassic Parrot. The Fresh Prince of Blue Air is freed from servitude and tests his liberty by being a dick. Dali Dad changes the rules, which he could have done 2 hours ago and saved us from this entire adventure, and everyone gets jiggy with it in the best Bollywood post-credit scene ever made.
Well done, sir.
Not too bad.
That was, I love.
Could have been worse.
The fact that you brought up the like, watching the kitty part, like I'm thinking, is everyone else watching the same thing that I'm watching? What the fuck is she talking about?
Why does Raj she go right wash there. Her cat?
Yeah,
exactly. The cat's right there. So, that was fun.
Yeah.
What do you say we talk about the cast for a minute?
Yes, please. Director, real quick, because it is Guy Ritchie.
Of course. And it's Gotta talk about Guy Ritchie.
So, we talk about Guy Ritchie, and it's just really funny because I didn't know it was Guy Ritchie that had directed this film until like I revisited, rewatched it, obviously, just before we did this recording, because it just didn't have that vibe the first time that I watched it. And you see a Guy Ritchie film, you know that's a Guy Ritchie's kind of style. You know, every director has their own noticeable or distinct style. But, you know, still a great director, and it just shows it doesn't have to be all rude and crude. There doesn't have to be guns and, you know, British people everywhere for it to be a Guy Ritchie film. So when I say Guy Ritchie, what's the first film that you could think of?
Well, the first film I think of is Lock, Stock.
His first
and
one.
And Two Smoking Barrels. But the movie that I want to say is Snatch.
It's my favorite one, yeah.
Because that movie was awesome. Yeah,
Snatch is my favorite Guy Ritchie film. For sure, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, obviously, as well. That was his first one that he ever did. So I'm going to run through just a couple of really, really well-known ones, at least the ones that I'm going to talk about real quick.
Yeah.
We have Rock and Roller, of course. Sherlock Holmes, obviously the first one, and then the second one with
Robert Downey Jr. Yeah.
And Jude Law as, both Game of Shadows and then the original Sherlock Holmes. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. with, of course, Armie Hammer and Henry Cavill. The Gentleman, The Covenant as well. And those are just a few just to talk about because Guy Ritchie does deserve that recognition.
That's where we should know Guy Ritchie from. And he does certainly have a style because he does like to use odd camera angles, well, not odd filming speeds.
Yes.
Like, he does things in fast forward and slow motion, I think, a lot, just for dramatic effect. And I think it works, except I thought it was a really odd choice to use it in this particular movie.
Yeah.
Where he used it in this particular movie. Okay, Aladdin falling from the castle when a Jafar pushes him out in slow-mo as he tumbles towards the ocean, you know, his watery death.
Really cool.
That was cool.
Yeah, that made sense.
That was deserved. Shooting the entire, quote-unquote, music video for One Jump Ahead. That was weird, man. I never quite got that.
Okay, so when we get to Did You Know, I'm going to definitely expand on that a little bit because there's a lot of stuff that really went into doing it. But I agree, it's like an option that a director chose to make, but it's almost specific for artistic value, not necessarily for any practical reason.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's kind of how it felt.
Yeah, and I don't pretend to understand all art. I don't think anybody should.
It's subjective, right?
But it was, it was, you know, what he wanted to do at the time. It was what he felt fit the scene. I just didn't get it.
Mm-mm.
And it was incredibly hard on the actors.
Oh,
but we'll get into that shit later, right?
Yeah.
All right, excellent. So, what do you say we talk about Naomi Scott for a quick second?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or Jasmine.
Let's get Naomi Scott out of the way.
Who is supposed to be 15 years old, by the way.
Don't tell me that.
Naomi Scott did not look 15.
No, thank God. But was she actually 15 in the film?
She was, as a Disney princess,
She
was 15.
So, in the lore of Disney.
In the remake, she's obviously a lot older.
Like 20, hopefully.
Yeah, you would think.
Hopefully.
And a lot less scantily clad than our 15-year-old cartoon version.
I did notice that.
There's no bare midriffs, no...
Yes, no exposed belly regions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what do we know Naomi Scott from?
I know her from only one thing, which is kind of sad to say out loud because she is an incredible actress and she has an amazing voice as well. But when it comes to like actual filmography, I knew her as Elena in Charlie's Angels.
That's right. The remake of Charlie's Angels.
Yeah, that one with Cameron Diaz, Drew Barrymore, and Lucy Liu.
Yeah.
And of course, Bill Murray as Bosley.
That's right,
I forgot who voiced Charlie.
And the new one was Kristen Stewart, Elizabeth Banks, some other people that I should know that I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But
I never saw it.
I didn't see it.
Never seen it. I didn't even know Kristen Stewart was in it, to be honest with you.
Yep, didn't see it, so I couldn't really bring it up, and I don't want to expound on it at all because I don't know anything about it. But I know her as the Pink Power Ranger.
In what?
In the 2017 Power Rangers film.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's all I really know Naomi Scott
from. Interesting.
Since that's all we know Naomi Scott from, how about we move on to the incredibly famous and well-known Mina Massoud.
Yes, Aladdin. I knew him in...
I don't know anything about this guy.
So he was Tarek Kassar in Amazon's version of Jack Ryan, which had John Krasinski as Jack Ryan, the CIA agent. Yeah. He also, I know you're not a big video game guy, but he did voice multiple different people in the video game Watch Dogs.
I thought you were going to say Aladdin.
Not Aladdin. That would have been really fucking funny. But that's all I really had him for as well.
Okay. When you started this, I thought you were trying to like come up with a joke about how you didn't know him from anything. That, you actually had some stuff for
me. I had a little bit. Stuff that I did know about for sure, but not well known other than that, which
I don't understand why. Seems like he was a really good actor.
Yeah.
He's got an incredible look.
Oh, for sure.
He's, you know, he's got that Hollywood look to him. He could fit a lot of different parts, and the guy's got some acting talent. I don't understand why he isn't getting more roles. But I guess we can move on from Mina. How about we do Willard Carroll Smith?
Yes. I didn't know his middle name was Carroll.
Yes. Will Smith, the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Will Smith.
As Genie / the Mariner.
Yeah.
You probably know this guy from a couple of things.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff.
It's another one of those times that we have an actor that has an incredible and long filmography that we could probably spend 5 minutes, but then you add 15 different tangents or foreign contaminants, as we call them.
Absolutely.
Do you want to do a little tennis on Will Smith?
You know, that's not a bad idea.
Just to get out of the way?
Yeah. Talent tennis for Will Smith. Let's do just a quick back and forth. We'll take up 30 seconds of your time because everybody knows who Will Smith is. Oh. I mean, come on. You want to start us out?
Well, you know what I want to say? Okay, what is your favorite Will Smith movie?
My favorite Will Smith movie? Oh, God. You know, I want to say 6 Degrees of Separation.
I've never seen that before.
Really?
Yeah.
It was one of his earlier films. Like, he did that film when he was still filming The Fresh Prince.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was about this hustler kid who moves in with a rich family and gets like a taste of the rich life. He lies and says he's the kid. I think he's the son of Sidney Poitier.
Okay.
And just hustles this family and doesn't do anything bad. Like, he doesn't steal from him or anything. He just kind of injects himself in their life. And eventually they find out that he's just some homeless dude. And it's a heart-wrenching, interesting drama.
I'm intrigued. I'll have to watch it.
Yeah, definitely. What do you think of first?
My favorite for sure would be Bad Boys with... obviously, Martin Lawrence as well. They did several different Bad Boys 1-3 or 1-4, whatever they're doing. I think 3 they've done, and then they're going to be doing 4 pretty soon here.
I think that's right, yeah.
But that is like my favorite. I fucking love him as Mike Lowry in Bad Boys.
If we're talking about rewatchable, okay, so I said 6 Degrees of Separation. Mm-hmm. We are going way too long on Will Smith already. Sorry, everybody. All right,
we didn't even do the table tennis yet.
I know.
We just want to keep talking about it.
I just wanted to throw this one out there that I think my favorite movie of his to rewatch, because 6 Degrees is hard to watch.
Sure.
It's just, it's heartbreaking. How about Hitch? Can I just say Hitch? Because I can watch that every day of the week and not get sick of it.
I enjoy that. It's like a rom-com that's, you know, you don't really get sick of watching. And you're not even embarrassed about saying you love it.
No, heck no. No, that was a great film.
Kevin James, he's doing the dance, and she's like fucking digging it the entire time.
They have a post-credit scene too with dancing.
No way.
In that movie.
Oh my God.
Yeah, the wedding scene, don't you remember?
No.
The wedding between the two characters who Hitch is trying to hook up the entire movie.
And they get married. She's like fucking.
After the credits, there's a whole scene where all the couples go dancing down the aisle.
No, I don't think I remember that. Oh, it's been a while since I've seen the movie though.
Yeah, you got to see that.
All right, back and forth real quick. I'm going to say, of course, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Absolutely. How about Independence Day?
I, Robot.
Men in Black.
Focus.
Enemy of the State.
I Am Legend.
Wild Wild West.
Pursuit of Happiness.
Legend of Bagger Vance.
King Richard.
I'm going to cheat and say Men in Black 2.
Fucking Bad Boys 2.
Yeah, let's go through all those. Okay, After Earth.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Oh, I know.
M. Night Shyamalan, I'm on a ding dong.
Oh, it's a great director. Just terrible movie. Yeah, just awful.
He was good in the beginning.
And how is that supposed to be a Swiss Village? Family Robinson remake?
I have no idea.
It was just terrible. It was just an excuse for Will to go act with his son.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably enough with Will Smith, right? I mean, we've done a lot.
Yeah, I think that's, I think that's enough. Absolutely. Oh, wait. I want to say Bright, because I really like that movie.
Oh, Bright. Well, Joel Edgerton.
Yeah. You know, magic. It's basically like live action Lord of the Rings, only thousands of years later.
Yeah, he's like a goblin or an orc, isn't he, or something like that?
No, he's human.
No, Will Smith is human, but Joel Edgerton, his partner, is like an orc.
Yeah, he's an orc. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's magic users and
fairies everywhere.
Magic wands and all sorts of crazy fun stuff. And just a fun movie. Anyway, yeah, you're right. It's enough about Will Smith. How about we move on to Marwan Khanzari?
Ah, Jafar. Yes.
With a teenager's voice. Sorry, he doesn't have a teenager's voice. That was just a joke for the As I See It. It's just when you hear Jafar, you hear like, I hear the original Jafar, who didn't have like a Jeremy Irons playing Scar kind of voice, but it was more sinister.
Yes. If you closed your eyes, he's not very intimidating.
I'm sorry, Mr. Khanzari. You don't have an intimidating voice. He played a successful version of Jafar, I think, but it wasn't a scary version. It wasn't intimidating.
No.
It didn't seem like he was sinister just because I think of his voice, which I'm so sorry, man. I should stop making fun of this guy. What do we know Marwan from?
So I knew him in Murdered on the Orient Express.
He was in Murder on the Orient Express.
Like the Kenneth Branagh remake version.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The one with Johnny Depp and Josh Gad.
Okay.
Really funny.
think I've ever seen that version.
He's Pierre Michel. You ever seen that?
No.
So Kenneth Branagh redid it. Was Hercule Poirot. He is basically a fucking the best detective in the world. You know, it's all based off
I know the movie.
Agatha Christie, right? Yeah. You know all about that, right? So Kenneth Branagh, he did direct and start as the titular character, Hercule.
Yeah.
So he did Murder on the Orient Express. He's done Death on the Nile. And he recently just did Haunting in Venice. And they're all great.
Okay.
They're all super like a whodunit.
I don't think I've seen any of them.
If you like whodunit mysteries.
All right. I can get into that. I know that going back to Marwan Kenzari, Foreign Contaminant, I knew him. He was in The Mummy.
Oh,
the terrible Tom Cruise mummy.
Yeah, not the good version with Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, none of the good ones.
No.
I mean, even the third one wasn't that great, but it wasn't the 2017 version.
Yeah, he was Malik in The Mummy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
or Malik.
Malik.
He did play also Ishmael Sabak in Black Adam.
Okay, that one I knew.
Opposite Dwayne Johnson. Yes. Yes.
Actually, I didn't see that movie not too long ago, like sometime within the last 6 months to a year.
It's one of those like blockbuster style films that is not great, but it's still so fucking entertaining to watch.
It was meh.
Yeah.
I'll watch it again.
Absolutely.
Like it was rewatchable. It's just not something I'm going to crave watching. I'm going to bring up something a little bit weird. He was in What Happened to Monday.
What's that?
It is a late 2017, I think, movie, 16, 17, 18. And I caught it on Netflix, and it was just one of those weird things that got suggested for me. It's like in a dystopian future where you're only allowed to have one child. And somebody had septuplets, seven identical daughters, and each one gets a day of the week to go out of the house.
Whoa, what a weird
so
concept.
So they're each named for a day of the week. And then Monday goes missing, and it's about what happened to Monday.
Oh my, that's
and so they have to go on this quest to find out exactly what happened to their sister, but each one of them has to go out a certain day of the week.
Oh wow.
And they all have to relate like what's going on in their life, because they only have one life altogether outside of this house. And yeah, it's fun. It's an interesting movie.
What a weird concept.
Yeah,
that is such a cool, like, wow, I really want to watch that.
It's fun. Anyway, do we know him from anything else? Because that's all I got. I had that's the Black Adam thing, What Happened to Monday, and The Mummy.
Yep, I'm out.
All right, sweet. Then we'll move right along to, who are we moving along to? Naveed Nagaban as the Sultan.
Yes, sir.
What a fun character that was.
Yeah, I kind of liked him a lot.
I love that guy. I don't know him from a whole lot other than he was in a shit ton of TV.
Okay, what TV shows are you recognizing from?
Well, I'm going to bring up The West Wing right away because it's one of my favorites.
You love The West Wing.
I love The West Wing. But he was in Criminal Minds, Las Vegas. I love that show too.
Oh, yeah, that was actually a pretty good show.
Really big fan. Law and Order, SVU, NCIS, JAG, The Shield, like a lot of cop shows. Mm-hmm.
He's in The Fringe too, if I remember correctly.
Yep, Fringe, absolutely. Okay, I'm not going to list off his entire TVography. I don't know what you call it. Filmography from TV.
Yeah.
But he was in a lot of TV stuff. That's all I really know about him.
The only thing that I really knew he was in was he was Sheik El Obodi in American Sniper. Sort of Chris Kyle. America's Most Deadly Sniper. Yeah, Clint Eastwood directed it. Bradley Cooper played him.
Yep.
Yeah, that was a great fucking movie,
too.
I don't think
I've ever seen it.
It's a slow burn. It's cool to have it kind of based on, you know, real things that had happened.
Yeah.
A lot of it's kind of far-fetched, though. It is based slowly, like, a lot on his book.
All right, so we don't have a whole lot for Naveed. How about we go on to, Nassim Pedrad.
I loved that Jasmine got a friend.
Right?
The
only original added character
from
the original version.
Yes.
Or that wasn't from the original version.
No, Dahlia. Yeah.
Yep, Dahlia. Exactly. Yep. The princess's handmaiden.
Yes, or Genie's future baby mama.
Yeah, exactly. And Genie falls in love with her. There's a whole little subplot there. And he spends the whole movie trying to get some handmaiden's tale. Come on. That was a funny joke.
It was pretty good.
I can't believe you didn't laugh at that. Hopefully somebody laughed at that. So what do we know Nassim from?
She was Katie Peralta in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
That's right. Yeah. That's a very popular, very recognizable role. She was on Saturday Night Live for five years.
She was.
Right around 2010 to 2015-ish.
Great comedic actor. Very quick, obviously, as well. Quick-witted, which obviously you have to be on SNL. She fit that cast list extremely, extremely well.
Yeah, she was hilarious.
She was also Jillian in Despicable Me 2.
Okay, that one I didn't know. I don't know a whole lot of Universal films, I'm sorry.
They're all fucking... Those
very
are so
Disney-centric. But I should know the Despicable Me movies.
Yeah, on all the Minions.
Out of all of them, yeah. Everybody loves the Minions.
Always so funny.
And I haven't seen a single one of those films. It's on my list. I'm getting there, everybody. But, you know, Disney takes up so much of my time. And then these other garbage movies that I watch. I should just watch Despicable Me's. Sorry, where were we? Speaking of Disney movies, she had a voice role in Wish.
Oh, the new one.
The most recent one, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which I haven't seen yet, actually, which I should watch. It's on Disney Plus, isn't it?
It is on Disney Plus, yeah. She voiced a character called Sonya. But since you haven't seen it, probably a lot of of people haven't seen it. We won't go into that quite yet. She was in episodes of a lot of TV shows like The Gilmore Girls.
Oh, okay.
ER, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. A lot of comedic stuff, which is where she shines.
Makes sense.
For sure. But that's pretty much all I have for Nassim. That's where I think people would recognize her from. She's done a lot of other stuff, but I think we covered the big bases. How about Billy Magnusson?
Prince Anders.
As Prince Anders, the only white fucker in this film.
People were up in arms about it too, but it's like, why are you so mad about a white dude like being in this? He, if anything, he's just comic relief and he's making a fool out of himself.
Absolutely. He made all white people look stupid and I loved it.
I mean, well, damn it, man. It's like, you're never going to make anyone happy sometimes. It's just, there's always going to be someone to complain.
People are always going to find something to complain about.
Someone's going to get offended. But yeah, I love Billy Magnusson. I thought he was so fucking funny. And there was that deleted scene with the cannon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, what is he? He presents her with like, oh, it's a gift.
Yeah, they're like guessing what it is, and like he's like, no, you're wrong.
It's a cannon.
It's a cannon. And I can't even so do his phallic accent. It is the biggest dick you've ever seen. It's probably why they cut it.
But yeah, it's probably right.
It's so fucking funny. And he shoots it off, and he's like, oh, we hit the ship. He goes, did you hit the right ship? Because you missed the one with the target on it.
And I think a spinoff would have been really funny.
Oh, yeah.
I also think that was the wrong move for Disney, so I'm glad they canceled it.
Yeah.
You can't take the one character that everybody complained about and make an entire series about that character.
Or Disney could, because fuck everyone else. Like, Disney's like just flexing your muscles on him.
Come on, man.
You guys hate him? Oh, Prince Anders fucking spinoff. We'll make it 9 seasons. Just
if they're going to make a spinoff, let's do the Genie's spinoff. Yes. I want to know more about the djinn. Let's go back in time and learn about Jasmine's mother.
Right. How did the carpet get in there?
And how did the carpet get into the Cave of Wonders? Absolutely. There's all sorts of spinoffy fun stuff they could do there. Yeah. But Prince Anders, probably not the wisest idea. Anyway, what do we know of Magnusson from?
Well, you know, the very first thing that comes to mind, he was in No Time to Die. He was a CIA agent that had betrayed them.
Okay. I'm not huge into the new Bond films.
Oh, really? Daniel Craig is fantastic.
Ever since Craig took over, I kind of lost interest.
What?
I know.
They're all so good. Well, Quantum of Solace you could probably skip, but the rest of them are really, really good.
It's good to know. But I know him. He was in Into the Woods.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. He played Rapunzel's prince.
Cool.
In Into the Woods.
I did not know
that. Yeah, that was fun.
He played Doug Forrester in Bridge of Spies, which is a really good fucking movie, too.
I've never even heard of that one.
Another great fuck. I mean, you gotta know the filmography. You gotta
get out of the house a little bit.
Yeah. You gotta get out of the house a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I know he's done a lot of TV stuff, just like everybody else on this list.
Okay.
I'm not gonna list them off, but like Law and Order, CSI, Black Mirror, stuff like that.
Sure. Boardwalk Empire.
Like I can really group those three things together. Yeah. I don't know why I pulled those three things out of my ass.
I just love you said, I'm not gonna list them off, and you listed off four of them. he was also in Velvet Buzzsaw. He played in Big Short. He was one of the mortgage brokers in that, obviously, as well. Ryan and Game Night. So a couple of these other movies that people might know, but he's always just been a background character, never a lead actor in any film.
Yeah, exactly.
Thus far that I've seen, at least.
Yeah, we can't tell you everybody, okay, he was this guy in this movie. Mm-hmm. You're going to absolutely recognize him. Like, you have to have seen one of his minor character parts mm-hmm. to even come close. And to tell you the truth, just the outfit of Prince Anders almost makes him unrecognizable. Like, he doesn't look like the same guy in all these other parts. You can tell because he's got kind of an original face to him.
Yeah, like a distinct facial feature.
But he certainly doesn't sound like that in real life. Anyway, how about we move on from Billy? Let's try Numan Akar as Hakim.
I loved Hakim.
Hakim's great.
Was he the leader of the guards? Or the
Yeah, exactly.
Captain of the guards, mm-hmm. whatever he was. I like that character a lot because, again, it's almost like giving a voice to Jasmine, right, in the live action. But I knew him as Dimitri in Spider-Man.
That's the only thing I know him from.
Yeah. That's the only thing you know him from?
That's the only thing, yeah. He was Dimitri, which I think could be the character Chameleon.
That is? Well, that's...
Was it obvious or am I
That's what they're leaning towards. That's definitely what they're leaning towards.
Okay.
So we'll see. We'll see what they decide to do. It's under the umbrella now of Marvel and Disney.
Marvel/Disney, yeah.
Yeah, so they own it, so they can do a lot of things.
We could do a Spider-Man Far From Home episode.
Good. We'll have to focus on...
No, we'd have to start with the Tobey Maguire stuff.
Which is owned by Fox, which is now owned by Disney.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God, there's
it's
so much.
All coming back to Disney.
If you're ever wondering, guys, if you're ever going to run out of things to talk about, we're never going to happen.
Never, ever going to run out of things to talk about.
He also was Abu Rammel in Prison Break, which was a great, great show as well. And Haseem Haikani, which was in Homeland, which is a Showtime original series focusing on terrorists in the Middle East, that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, really cool. I know that show, yeah.
Claire Danes was in that as well. Really, really cool. Incredibly well acted and even better written series for sure. But
yep.
Those are the only things that I know him from.
Okay, excellent. We can shorten this cast list up a little bit. How about we talk about Alan Tudyk for 2 seconds?
Oh, you mean Disney's Lucky Charm?
Disney darling, yeah, Alan Tudyk. He has been in goddamn everything. He's just, I don't even know if Alan Tudyk does live action acting anymore. He's like, he is just voice acting everything.
Yeah.
He's the new Frank Welker.
Yeah.
He does all the noises for all the animals and a bunch of different characters. We're not going to get... Do you want to get into him?
Okay, here's the thing. We've talked about Alan Tudyk so many different times.
That's true.
It's one of those times where we're like, well, you just talked about that character. If you want to hear about Alan Tudyk, listen to other previous episodes.
Probably go back to the last episode we did.
Yeah, there you go.
No, that can't be because that was Snow White. He was not alive when that movie came out. But if you go back to our last 2 or 3 episodes, I'm sure Alan Tudyk is in there somewhere. And we probably did the same thing then. We were probably like, go back and listen to a different episode. Probably goes all the way back to Zootopia or something. Right. Like, okay, let's finally talk about Alan Tudyk. But we do go through his filmography quite a bit. I always say he was Watt in A Knight's Tale because that's where you could recognize his face.
Yes.
So that's my favorite thing to reference. But he was a ton of Disney stuff. Absolute ton of stuff. So we don't have to get into all of that. We can just move on to, oh my goodness, I said his name already. Gave up the goat on Frank Welker. He was in this movie too. Disney's first animated voice and sound darling.
Not just for Disney though too. I mean for
oh god, decades. He was all over the place.
Decades. He's been around for since like the late 70s.
Yeah, we're talking Scooby-Doo.
Mhm.
Original we're talking
Scooby-Doo. Transformers like.
Yeah, Transformers exactly. Yeah. He was a so ton many. Of Transformers. He was in Futurama.
Yeah.
That's a pretty old show now.
Yeah, it's pretty
I
old
can
now.
I call that a classic.
Just aging all of us.
Classic, but it's old now. Yeah, he was in all sorts of stuff. Should we talk about him for a minute or should we just I mean, reference just like, them back to the previous episodes?
Just like Alan Tudyk, doing? Realistically, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like he's been in so much stuff and we've talked about him so many times that it's kind of tough to talk about him again. But then again, we probably shouldn't do that because people tune in for the first time ever to That's Aladdin true. And we're like, hey, go look at this other episode.
Okay, so Alan Tudyk voiced Iago, obviously.
Yes. Because oh, we probably should have said that.
We can just say that.
I didn't even get into that. I didn't even tell everybody who Alan Tudyk played. He played the damn parrot, the Jurassic parrot.
Iago. Yeah. So instead of doing like the anthropomorphic style that like Gilbert Gottfried obviously voiced in the 1992 animated version, they did a very conscious decision and made him more of an animal-esque
Yeah, very
kind of
real
style.
To life. Yes. Absolutely.
And then Abu, obviously, Frank Welker voiced him.
Yep.
And like you've told me multiple times, the Game of Wonders in both the 92 version and the 2019 version.
Exactly. Yep. He played Abu Raja in the Cave of Wonders in all two movies.
All two of them.
I don't know why I wanted to say more. I wish there were more. But yeah, all two movies, the live action and the animated version. Yep. Yeah. I don't know why I like telling people that, but yeah, he played Abu.
It's impressive
Raja,
what he can do with his voice, man.
Right, exactly. To go from Abu, who's got that high-pitched, you know, like really high-pitched.
That was pretty good.
Abu.
Abu. That was awful. Oh my God.
To the Cave of Wonders, where he's just all deep and growly and, you know.
Which kind of gave me Megatron vibes a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, you exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly. Yeah, guy's got a great voice and he's incredibly talented. So what do you say we move on from the cast?
Yes. A little trivia, did you know?
Trivia, did you know? So there's a fair bit to talk about in this area of the podcast.
Yes, there is, but we're going to try our hardest not to compare the two or them we already have.
Yeah, we're going to try and stick to this movie alone and not do the comparison stuff because there's a lot of comparison stuff, a lot
there
of fun
is.
Stuff.
There is. And there might be some times we may bring up certain comparisons.
Yeah, we don't have to avoid it completely.
No.
We're just not going to try and talk about too much previous Aladdin stuff. Did we do trivia and did you know back on the first episode? We did, didn't we?
We did the entire episode.
Was it the entire thing?
Yes. Because you didn't even know it was a poor recording until 2 weeks later, three weeks later.
Yeah. All right. So did you know about this movie?
Yes.
You want to start?
Matt, did you know that the Magic Carpet's tapestry is very, very close when it comes to the design as the 1992 version of the animated classic?
Yes, I did, because you told me that on our very first episode.
That's true, I did. And
there are tiger heads on the tapestry.
There's tiger heads.
Mm-hmm.
It's purple.
And you're saying that this one had them as well?
It had the same tiger heads. They're mildly different. And this one, you assume it had probably been the Cave of Wonders for thousands of years, so it had a little bit of debris on it, probably not as clear. But yes, same color, same gold tassels, and of course, the beautiful Cave of Wonders on both.
And the Cave of Wonders head was probably a little bit more stylized in this one.
I think that and the animated one that had fire or lava coming out of his mouth, this one was more just
base, a tiger's
just
head.
A basic.
That's cool. Hey, Lance, did you know that when the genie makes an appearance on the map, when they're looking for a Babwa, and the genie like pops up on there, he swirls around and there is fantasy Land, Tomorrowland, and Adventureland from Magic Kingdom on that map.
I noticed Fantasyland because I think that was either the first one or that was the one in the middle.
Because, yeah, Yeah, that's the one with the castle.
Yeah.
But yeah, he made an Adventureland and a Fantasyland.
And a Tomorrowland, huh?
And a Tomorrowland, yeah.
That's crazy.
But they were labeled Fantasyland, Tomorrowland, and Adventureland. I thought that was fun.
Matt, of course, you knew the Mariner in the beginning is without a doubt Will Smith, right?
Yes.
AKA the genie, which you do get to find out, of course, later on. And the end suggests that exact same thing. You know, this actually is a nod to the 1992 version, which actually was a deleted portion of it.
Which we said we weren't going to talk about very much.
I know, but this is kind of important because
it is
a direct throwback. It's almost like a nod, nostalgic nod to the original.
Yeah.
And the reason this is important is because it is actually confirmed by former co-director Ron Clemens,
yes,
who did the original. So the nod is exactly right. The peddler in the beginning, singing Arabian Nights,
yep,
was actually the genie in disguise.
Yep.
And then the Mariner was, of course, the genie after he became freed by Aladdin.
Yeah. And it started out as just a fan theory because Robin Williams voiced both characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so people were like, was that the actual genie? And there's really no reason to believe that he was. But people, I think, started manufacturing ideas.
Right. Where did he get the lamp? Right. All that kind of thing.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, exactly. So there was swirling around on the non-existent internet at the time. I don't know. Was the internet a thing back
92?
Then?
92? AOL may have been
probably
a thing.
Probably not. Yeah, exactly. AOL online in IRC chat groups.
Yeah, exactly. The dial-up that like people who listen right now who are, you know, born in 1999 and beyond.
Have no idea what that horrible, horrible noise
was. You know, the fucking sound of like connecting to the internet.
Exactly. Hey, Lance, did you know that once they're in the desert, the magic carpet is actually making a Cinderella castle in the sand?
Yeah, I did notice that part.
How the hell is he making a sand castle in desert sand?
I had a problem with that too, because there is no moisture in that sand.
That's what I'm saying. Of course, he is magic.
He is magic.
I don't know if he can perform magic.
That's a good question.
But he's obviously magical because there's no such thing as a flying carpet. But
yeah.
A sentient carpet? Interesting.
I did notice the castle, but it wasn't until I noticed something that was happening in the background and it was getting bigger and bigger. But it wasn't until he did like the Tinkerbell flying over.
Yeah, he tosses a little bit of sand up and over the castle. Yeah. Like in the original Disney logo in the beginning of the movies,
mm-hmm,
they have that little sparkle that goes over the castle. And a lot of people think that's fireworks. It's not. It's Tinkerbell.
I've always thought it was fireworks, yeah.
And it's little Tink flying over the castle. And yeah, he actually tosses a little bit of sand up and over the castle that makes that complete arch. I thought that was super cute.
You know, Matt, this was a matter of debate in the original one, in episode one. And now I'm going to bring it up again. If I remember correctly, the opening to the Cave of Wonders was what animal in the 1992 version?
It was a tiger.
What was it in the live action?
It was a tiger.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Because it kind of had a mane.
It did look like it had a mane, but it was just sand dunes.
So Disney Wiki, which I have now found two different sources and confirmed, it actually is a lion's head.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, dead really? Serious. So the original was the tiger god, which was brought together by like the scarab beetle going into the eyes and awakening it.
Yeah.
But if you see it in the beginning during the Arabian Nights sequence in the 2019 version, it actually is a lion's head as aww, opposed to a tiger from the original.
Well, that's a bummer.
I know.
Besides the fact that tiger is like my spirit animal.
Okay.
I really liked that it was the tiger because it's a big character in Middle Eastern culture and Middle Eastern folklore.
Yeah.
I think it's a Rakshasa is the tiger god.
Okay.
And I think that's what it is. I could be wrong.
You probably
fact-check me on that one.
Yeah.
But it's a big character, a big part of the culture. And so I'm a little disappointed they replaced it with a lion.
Maybe there was because Raja was in it already. They didn't want to have two tigers.
That's possible.
You know, not like we're not confused about which
subtle
one's
differences,
which. Yeah, exactly. But yeah.
Hey, Lance, did you know that there was some references to Aladdin in other live-action remakes?
I did not know that.
The Jungle Book in 2016, you can see the genie's lamp in King Louis' temple.
Oh, my God.
Where Christopher Walken is, like, throwing around all of his treasure.
Yeah.
And genie's lamp is in there.
Was it Gigantopithecus? What's his name?
Gigantopithecus.
Oh, my God. That whole fucking song was the best part of that entire film. I'm sorry.
I agree.
Foreign Contaminated, but yeah, that
absolutely
was awesome.
I can't believe people don't like that movie more.
How do you not?
I loved that movie, but you're right. That was the best scene for sure.
Yeah.
And there was also a model of the Agrabah Castle in the Be Our Guest scene in Beauty and the Beast, the 2017 Emma Watson.
So Aladdin came out after Jungle Book and after Beauty and the Beast, right?
Correct.
That could have been maybe a precursor. Like they already knew what they wanted to make. They're just still getting all the cast right, finding the right chemistry between their two lead actors, which they eventually did find.
Yeah.
So probably, you know, Disney's
that was
like,
a big production.
This is coming.
You want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah, sure.
They delayed this movie for the better part of, I think, 6 months just because they couldn't decide who they were going to play certain parts. They couldn't figure out who they were going to get to play Jasmine.
Because Mina Massad was hired first, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Mina Massad had the part. He was Aladdin for sure. And they were pairing him up and they were waffling back and forth between two actresses, eventually went with Naomi Scott, but they were originally going to go with the other actress. Once they saw the on-screen chemistry between Mina and Naomi, they chose Naomi.
Okay.
Sorry, I just wanted to talk about that for one
second. No, I think that was a wise decision on their part. And people are careful about that. Production companies are very careful about
that. Oh, it can make or break a movie.
You can absolutely make or break a movie because you can tell. You can't force those types of like organic conversations and their interactions. They have to be genuine. And exactly. Clearly it worked out because you would not have ever guessed that they didn't like each other on set. Which they did. They obviously, they're still friends to this day.
Oh, the behind the scenes stuff was crazy fun.
She had the, or not him, Mina had the cell phone. He was supposed to be a videographer for all the different stuff on set. You could tell everyone loved what they were doing. They were so happy and so proud to be a part of it.
I think it's on Disney Plus.
Yeah. There's an extra portion next to the details and by the movie portion.
But it's like all these Mina's video diary or something like that. All the actors and all the set, everybody on set had to give up their cell phones. But they gave Mina a cell phone strictly to record and just do behind the scenes stuff. And it's great. You should see that just the behind the scenes chemistry between Mina, Naomi, and Will was just amazing.
You know, Matt, looking at Guy Ritchie's films, right, his filmography in general, which we talked about earlier when we did his director filmography, you would have never guessed that, like, okay, Guy Ritchie, are you sure? Have you seen his movies? Should he be doing a kid's movie? But he really wanted to make it good, you know, not for the audiences and not because he loved probably the story. His vision was to make something that he could watch with his children.
Yeah.
That was like
and
the whole
I don't think
thesis.
It turned out to be a kid's movie. I mean, it was a version of a kid's movie. It was absolutely watchable by kids.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, offensive in any way. It wasn't scary or dirty or anything like that. They didn't make a down and gritty like Batman version of the story, but it was, I think, enjoyable by adults and kids alike.
Sure. It had adult themes, but it never skated the line. It was never like questionable at any point in time.
Yeah.
It was entertaining. It was G through and through. You did obviously have your points where you're thinking, do I really want my children to watch this? But at the same time, those are, you know, you got to think of the sign of the times. Like, when was this all happening?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Lance, did you know that the Mariner's boat in the very first scene of the movie very much resembles his former living space?
The lamp.
The lamp, yeah.
Yeah,
I always thought it was bizarre that the boat was shaped in a way that like waves could just like lap over the center part of the boat, like the most vulnerable part of the boat. It was just the bow and the stern that were elevated. And then there was like the little cut down, you know what I'm saying, on either side. It struck me as weird until I realized that it was supposed to be like lamp shaped.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like a throwback to like where he came from. I remember in the 92 version, Robin Williams, after he got free, he still had magical powers.
Yeah.
Does Will Smith's genie still have magical powers?
Oh, well, we will see,
I think he might still.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, now I think about it, because Jafar only became a genie and they got trapped, so maybe he...
But he did say that his final wish was to become human, and then he becomes free and the little handcuffs fall off and he gets to look more human, but maybe he can still do magic.
Puts on a goofy hat.
Maybe that's how the boat doesn't fucking sink.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. he turned his lamp into the fucking ship.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Matt, we did talk about, I was going to bring it up again, and the filming of One Jump was, of course, a challenge, not only, as you said, for the director, but also for the actor, Mina Massad. His vision was interesting, right?
Artistic, to say the least.
Let's call it artistic, right? But the choreography, though, probably one of the most challenging parts of it. So look at it this way. 24 frames a second is essentially real time.
Yeah, that's normal, yeah.
So that's like standard. That's like how the film camera picks up the frame by frame, and that's how you visualize it, you know, as if it would be just be normal.
Mm-hmm.
He jumped the camera up to 36 frames a second, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it really kind of tested its kind of the pacing itself for
sure.
Him because you could see everything happening in the background very, very quickly, but his lips as he was voicing the lyrics didn't change at all.
Exactly. That was impressive.
It was pretty impressive how he was able to do that. Given the slow motion thing, like you said, the falling out backwards into the ocean makes sense for it.
Yeah.
I think that even though it was artistic and maybe not the right choice, I think that was just him speaking to the camera in a way, and it's almost like escaping the guards was second nature to him, right? Just like a walk to the market. It happens every day. So to him, everything is happening so quickly behind him, but to him, it's just like a, here we go again.
Just another walk in the park.
Another day in the office. Yep. Next thing, I'm after I lose these guys, I know all the shortcuts, I know all the hiding spaces. I can get right back to my humble abode and be done with this. And you know what I mean? I'm assuming that's probably why
I do know what you mean. Yeah. And it did add to kind of like the franticness of the scene behind him, where it did seem a little bit more chaotic And he did seem a little bit more calm.
More calm and more collected, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like he was moving in normal speed and everybody else was moving in slow motion or fast motion. And, you know, no matter how fast his environment, everything just seemed normal to him. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Yeah.
That's my own way of looking at it. That's my personal interpretation of the scene itself. I still didn't like it. I think that
it was weird.
Poor choice. Yeah. But honestly, who are we to judge?
Hey, Lance, did you know that when Genie and Aladdin are out in the desert and Aladdin wants Genie to make him a prince? Mm-hmm. And he says, well, there's a lot of gray area. Be careful with your words.
Oh, he wants like specifics, he said, right?
Yeah, I could just make you a prince and you'd be stuck snuggling up to that dude for the rest of your life. And he makes the prince off in the distance.
Yeah.
That prince is Will Smith.
What do you mean?
It's not actually Will Smith. The actor isn't Will Smith. Oh. But he made him a fresh prince.
Oh, my God. That's actually really fucking funny.
All puns aside, that prince was dressed in the floral green and pink, just like the Fresh Prince logo.
Oh, my God.
And he even says, y'all see my palace? Probably talking about Uncle Phil's place.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he just conjures him a fresh prince.
Yeah.
And
that's a cool little Easter egg. I thought
that was kind of an interesting take on the prince from Make Me a Prince scene.
I remember reading it was Jamal Sims, the choreographer, who actually played the character.
I think you're right, yeah.
In the background. But I love that they did that throwback to, the earlier days of Will Smith's career as the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. That's
exactly.
Awesome.
Threw a little Big Willie style in there.
Yes, that's so awesome. You know, but obviously I like the original more, but there is one, maybe two things that I like so much more about this film. And one of them I already talked about for sure, which was Jasmine having her own voice. Clearly, yes. Dahlia being a friend, having that interaction in the film was such a cool addition. But my absolute favorite thing was Iago, the giant bird portion of it, where he was chasing after the lamprey. This is actually based off of Middle Eastern folklore. The giant bird, which is called the Roc. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah. The ROC.
ROC. Exactly.
Yeah, we're not talking about Dwayne Johnson.
No, no. Yeah. He did throw up one eyebrow, I think, as he was chasing him. but the Roc, of course, from 1001 Nights or Arabian Nights, which is, of course, the story of Sinbad. The Roc used to feed its young elephants. This is how large it was. But yeah, that's how Sinbad got around, was on top of this gigantic fucking bird called the Roc. So I think they probably did that, a conscious decision to add that as like a, again, you know, this is where the story comes from.
Yep.
And we're doing something not original, but definitely making this movie our own as opposed to how they made it in the first place, which is when Jafar turned into a big cobra to kind of chase after him inside the Sultan's palace.
Which I was a little disappointed I didn't get to see.
Yeah.
I would rather have Jafar have turned into a cobra. I think that would have been a cooler visual.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is definitely a cooler reference to the culture.
Right.
When the bird turns into the Roc, and like an appropriately sized Roc too. This thing is like the size of a small Cessna.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it could easily like pick up a horse and carry it away. And you were saying it was in Sinbad.
Yep. Well, 1001 Nights or Arabian Nights, which is the transited version.
It was in one other story in that, and I'm going to try and pronounce this right. Hopefully, I don't butcher it. It was Abd al-Rahman the Maghribi's story of the Rook. Actually, I think that was pretty good.
That sounds...
It was that story and Sinbad the Sailor, which is so much easier to pronounce, that the Roc was in 1001 Nights. And I was really happy that they did that too.
Yeah, it's a cool addition for sure.
I think so. Did you know, Lance, that Genie's human form has a blue and gold outfit that comes directly from the Broadway production?
No.
Yeah, James Monroe Englehart, who played Genie on Broadway, had almost an identical blue and gold outfit that they kind of stole for the movie.
I did not know that, actually.
Lance, did you know that Jim Carrey was purportedly the original choice to play the Genie?
I would have hated that so much.
I think so too, but it's kind of a Monday morning quarterback kind of thing. Like, you can see better in hindsight kind of deal. Like, okay, we've all fallen in love with somebody as a certain character.
Sure.
And that's the only way you can see that character now.
In his defense, he's not such a slapstick comedian like he was with The Mask and fucking Ace Ventura and
that's
shit.
That's the thing. He's such a good... I'm sorry to interrupt, but that is the thing. He is such a good improv actor.
Yeah, he's done dramatic shit. Truman Show was fantastic.
He probably could have done a little bit more like Robin Williams, kind of a genie. But then again, that might have pissed me off more than anything else. I don't know. But he could have added in a lot more improv comedy.
Right.
I still think Will Smith did an amazing job and he was the perfect choice.
Yes.
But you know what I'm saying? I'm just trying to give Jim Carrey a little bit of credit.
Well, what's Jim Carrey's singing chops like? That's what I want to know. Because Will Smith at least comes from a vocal background.
That's true.
So if Jim Carrey can't fucking sing, what's the point of even considering him as a potential genie in this film?
That's a very good point. But he didn't get the job anyway because of he was engrossed in a lawsuit at the time.
Oh, that's too bad.
And couldn't take any long-term
work. Oh, darn. Yeah.
That was a really unfortunate lawsuit. lawsuit too. I'm not going to get into it, but it was one of those things that we just don't want to talk about.
Yeah.
He's not a bad guy. He didn't do anything wrong. He was just, some people accused him of doing some stuff that it turns out he didn't do. And it was, yeah.
So he's exonerated. That's good.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we didn't talk about the music in the first one, which I remember afterwards when we did episode one, I was like, God, I didn't talk about the fucking music. And yeah. I love the music so much.
Oh, it's so good.
It is some of the best music in Disney history. And I'm not even being biased. That is actual fact. I mean, you put Frozen's Let It Go, obviously up yeah. there. You put Moana's How Far I'll Go. You have Encanto's We Don't Talk About Bruno. I mean, A Whole New World is literally in that same category of like incredibly perfect Disney movie.
Absolutely.
Disney music.
Yeah. And yet I'm still a huge fan of Prince Ali. The song.
Prince Ali.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's Prince
Ali. I love the Prince Ali song.
I do too.
That was just my, I mean, A Whole New World. Yes, it's a great song. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves it. It's definitely the, you know, the Grammy darling. But out of all the songs here, it was either Friend Like Me or Prince Ali was my favorite.
That sequence was cool. And didn't they like fix some issue with the Prince Ali song?
No, you're talking about Arabian Nights.
Sunday Salam as opposed to Friday Salam.
Yeah, yeah. That was Arabian Nights in the very beginning.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay.
No, you're right.
It is. You're right.
It was Prince Ali.
Okay.
Yeah, because it was Brush Up Your Sunday Salam was in the original version. And Sunday has no significance in Islam. So they changed it to Brush Up Your Friday Salam.
Which is more culturally accurate.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But the music was like, it was great in both. Like, honestly, maybe I found myself liking it more because of the music. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not the original and it'll never be the original. But I just am happy to get a chance to finally talk about the music because I was so mad at myself after the first episode recording because I did not talk about my favorite part about the movie itself, which was, of course, the music.
Absolutely. I've got another one. Did you know, Lance, that they deleted a song from this movie?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, they wrote a whole other song. It was another original song besides Speechless that was supposed to be sung between Aladdin and Jasmine when they were in Aladdin's, you know, quote unquote apartment when they were in his house. And Jasmine picks up that instrument and strums a couple of chords and they both realize that their mothers taught them that song. They were supposed to sing that song together.
I did not know that.
They filmed the whole scene.
It's like a mandolin, wasn't it?
It's something like that, yeah. That funny little guitar looking thing. They actually filmed that entire scene, but they cut it for brevity, I think.
I wish that was part of the deleted scenes. I would have watched it.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure where you can find it or if you can find it out there.
You'd think it'd be out there somewhere.
But, you know, YouTube it. I don't know. It might be out there. Google it. All right, I think we've beat people over the head with trivia enough for a little while.
Yeah.
What do you say we get into the present?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where is Aladdin in the parks?
Ooh, is it present anywhere? I know that we came up with a really cool fantasy bar, episode one.
Yes.
But is it present in any one of the actual parks in the world?
Well, there's no bars.
Ooh. Well, let's fucking fix that.
Yes, and we certainly will. But there is some representation of this movie in the parks. And when I say this movie, I say Aladdin.
Okay.
In general, because there was representation of Aladdin in the parks before this movie got made. And after this movie got made, there was no additional presence in the parks.
Okay.
So about this movie, no. Is there Aladdin presence in the parks? Yes. Just to go on real quick, there's the magic carpets of Aladdin in the Magic Kingdom in Walt Disney World, opened back in 2001. It's kind of a Dumbo-style ride. It's just kind of a...
Like a merry-go-round?
Yeah, exactly. It's just a merry-go-round that goes up and down.
Okay.
And like up and down, like you go like 20 feet in the air. And it's got a spitting camel in front of it too.
That's fucking awesome.
That used to be part of a parade float. It was a part of the Aladdin parade float in the, I think, the Festival of Fantasy parade. One of the parades that went down Main Street and the camels spit. And they took it out of the parade, and instead of just retiring the camel and throwing it away, they put it in front of the magic carpets of Aladdin, and now it spits on guests all day long. There's also two similar rides, the flying carpets over Agrabah, I think that's what it's called, in the Walt Disney Studios Park in Disneyland Paris, and Jasmine's flying carpets in Tokyo Disney Sea. They're all basically the exact same ride. Hmm. It's just you get into the little thing, and then it rises up into the air, you go around in circles, and then you come back down and you get out. It's a kid's ride. Not that I haven't ridden them, but...
I just came up with a really weird concept in my head.
Do tell.
So this has nothing to do with, obviously, the present, but this just struck me because I was wondering, remember I brought up where did the magic carpet come from, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Cave of Wonders, all that is just riches. What's the first thing that most people want to be if they have three wishes? First one, they want to be rich.
Rich, yeah.
What if, like, after the third wish, you lose all that stuff, and then where is all that going to go? It just disappear into the ether. What if the Cave of Wonders is the overflow for all of those wishes over the thousands of years?
Oh, that's interesting.
Someone wanted a magic carpet, and after the third wish, okay, well, you're out of wishes. You lose all of the stuff that you've gained, and it all goes into that area.
Is that what happens, though? Is that how wishes work?
I don't know.
Do you lose all that stuff after you make your third wish?
I don't know.
Why would you ever make a third wish?
That's true.
I would just make two wishes and keep all my stuff.
Well, after the third wish, you know, obviously he wasn't a prince anymore.
He wasn't a prince anymore before the third wish, though.
That's true.
Which I never really reconciled with. I didn't like that.
Yeah.
Because he said, make me a prince. He made him a prince. And then all of a sudden later in the movie, he wasn't a prince anymore.
Yeah. Define makes me a prince.
Or he decided that he never was a prince.
Yeah. That's
like a good he never point said, too. Yeah. Sorry to keep interrupting.
No, you're good.
We keep talking over each other. But he didn't say, make me look like a prince or, you know, help me convince the princess that I am a prince. Mm-hmm. He said, make me a prince. So he made a Babwa. He made a whole freaking country.
He should have a kingdom somewhere.
He should have a kingdom.
In theory, right?
He has all these riches. I don't know why they had to change the law because he was a prince, goddammit. He mm-hmm. should have been able to marry Jasmine. So I don't understand.
It's interesting never really though, isn't it, to think about? That. Like that's... I don't know. Maybe that's what happens to all the wishes after.
Yeah. But maybe, you know, if somehow people lose their wishes or someone steals the lamp and then all their wishes go away or something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a repository for all the things that people have wished for in the past. And that's got to be a lot of golden treasures and stuff.
Right.
So that's why it's full of golden treasures.
Okay. That just came to me. I just wanted to say that. I hope this makes
sense. That's a smart idea.
I don't know if I'll ever make the podcast, but.
Oh, I'm leaving it in there. That's a really good idea. But that's all I've got for the present.
Okay.
Is just the carpet things.
Okay.
And in Adventureland, where the magic carpets of Aladdin are, they slowly transitioned the shops around it to kind of resemble Agrabah-style shops.
Mm-hmm.
But not really. There's not really much more than that. I mean, they appear in... Jasmine and Aladdin appear in some parades and cavalcades and stuff, but nothing really permanent. And there are some character meet and greets in Adventureland. They've been spotted in Morocco in the pavilion in Epcot, which is where I think we should put our bar.
So Morocco, we brought up in episode one, and that's where we actually put our bar, was in the pavilion of Morocco, which made the most sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like categorically, geographically speaking, obviously, where else would you possibly want it to be?
Exactly.
So our first concept bar for Aladdin was the Cave of Wonders.
I'll tell you right now, everybody, I'm not changing my concept. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know if you've listened to episode one or not, but that is definitely my top three, maybe my favorite bar we've ever made.
So you didn't write anything down?
I wrote a bunch of stuff down, but it's pretty much the same stuff.
Interesting. I have three completely new ideas.
Okay, excellent. What do you got?
All right, well, I'm just going to run through them real quick. I'm just going to start off with my least favorite, and I'm going to end on my favorite one, the one that I really wanted to do.
Okay.
The first one, of course, was Aladdin's humble abode, which I wanted to do, kind of his apartment, as we called it, right? Stone stairs going up into this area with torn red and green tapestries and maybe a mandolin up there, but just an area where, you know, you get natural light coming through, and it's obviously he's disheveled and falling apart, but like, you know, he still wants to serve his guests, and that could be a nice little cool area for people just to order the drinks and hang out.
Absolutely. And that could be kind of a speakeasy kind of bar.
Exactly. It could be like a hidden area
where at a certain time of day when the bar is about to open, somebody gets, you know, one lucky guest gets to pull the rope.
Mm-hmm.
And then the steps, you know, emerge. We couldn't do those wooden planks. We can't have people jumping from plank to plank. But pull the rope and the steps come out somehow.
Yep.
And that's how you get in and out of the bar.
I think about, too, that part of that scene where he's like, but it has a great view and he pulls the drape and it has the Sultan's palace, but he pulls the drape and it's Cinderella's castle.
That would be neat if Cinderella's castle was in Epcot.
So, but it's not even close. You can't
but
even see it.
It's not even, no.
Clearly, I don't know where Epcot
it's
is.
It's literally miles away.
All right. So I'm going to go with my second concept then. I liked the market scene because to me, that really kind of showed the culture.
I agree.
So I wanted individual market areas, one big market area, but different carts. And each cart served a different drink and food pairing.
Oh, that's nice.
So instead of having to like wait in line in one area, you had different options. You didn't have to be like special reservations, or you didn't have to worry about phoning ahead or you know, what's it, the Disney Pass or whatever it is to get into these bars.
Yeah, making the online reservations.
Yeah. And... it's basically a to-go feature area, just like the huts at Renfest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're going up there and you have your sugared dates, and then you have your, you know, cocktail that pairs well with the sugared dates. You know,
absolutely.
Each different area had a different style.
So for Disney Park nerds, we are talking about the Food and Wine Festival in Epcot, where they use all these little pop-up, I don't want to say bars, but little pop-up kiosks that each serve like two or three food items and have like one signature drink.
Mm-hmm.
That's about what we're talking
about. Exactly. Thank you for clarifying exactly what my plan was and my focus was. But ultimately, I mean, the Cave of Wonders is great, and we both love our speakeasies, and the way we built it was fantastic. I loved the harvest scene so much. That gardens, the hanging gardens.
The harvest dance?
The fountain, the harvest dance. Yeah, that where they're, well, the harvest festival, I think is what they called it. But yeah, it had these like, really cool mosaic tiles, and then a fountain in the middle, and you know, hanging like Babylonian style gardens from the ceiling and stuff like that. The night sky of Agrabah in the backdrop. I just loved that whole thing because people were drinking cocktails, man. They were hanging out, they were partying. Maybe every now and again, we get some belly dancers coming through, like every hour on the hour. There's some fun live show that just happens to come through. And if you're there, you're there to witness it and you can enjoy it. And you know, something just different.
Yeah, I agree. That's a great idea. I only have one issue with all these.
Okay.
And the problem with that is that Morocco is a dry country. It's not 100% a dry country, but it is a majority Muslim country. Mm-hmm. And so there are very, very few places to drink. So I think that Agrabah would probably not have market pop-ups for places where you could get cocktails. The only places you can really get cocktails in Morocco are tourist joints.
Okay.
And they're built strictly for people who are tourists and the very small part of the population that is not Muslim. So they are very respectfully, I don't want to say hidden, but you know what I mean? Like out of the way, not obvious.
Right.
And there's the whole month of Ramadan that we got to contend with, where there's absolutely no drinking. And I want to put it out in Agrabah somewhere. I think all those ideas are great. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it would be appropriate with the culture.
Sure.
Which is why I want to stick with the Cave of Wonders bar, because who's going to be regulating anything inside of a giant lion's mouth?
You know, I'm not mad about that, because even though I loved my concepts and I thought they were very clever and creative.
I do too.
If someone, let's just think like the mass majority of population coming through, I would say that probably at least half of them have been like, you know, this is really cool, but they should have done a fucking Cave of Wonders bar. That's where I want to drink. You know what I mean?
That's probably true, yeah.
So we should just stick with the first one. I think that that's a good idea.
I think all your ideas were great.
Thank
I just
you.
Think the best way to be respectful mm-hmm. of the Moroccan pavilion and the Moroccan people and the culture is to keep it at the very, very back.
Yeah.
Not having anything to do with the cultural stuff that surrounds it, mm-hmm. because Morocco is kind of like a marketplace pavilion. There's different shops and a couple of different restaurants. Wish one would open back up, but it hasn't. And there's places where you can buy all sorts of fun stuff. And there's like little museum areas where you can explore the culture. And it's all very, very Moroccan. I'm not going to get into the history of the Morocco Pavilion, but that I don't even know the leader, the Sultan of Morocco, the King of Morocco, whatever his title is, actually sent his royal artisans to Epcot to help build and design that pavilion.
Okay, that's so that it would fucking be appropriate. Awesome.
Yeah, so they had hands in almost every part of the construction of this pavilion.
So they wanted to be authentic as possible.
Exactly, exactly. So inserting IP into it, probably not the best idea, mm-hmm. but that's what we're going with.
Yeah.
So we're going to try and do it respectfully. We're going to put it at the far back of the pavilion so it'll be visible. You've got your giant tiger's head, you know, in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the sand dunes have kind of swept up to the edge of the city.
Yeah.
And that's
the closer
back
you
where
get to the bar, there's like patches of sand. And then by the time you get up to the wall, it's just one big sand tiger head.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or lion's head, I
or
guess,
lion's
if we're
going
to go that way. I really
Hakim,
liked the
Hakim like guarding it.
I can't stand that it's a lion's head, but I'm going to keep saying it. Mm-hmm. I really liked the lion's head in this 2019 version, mm-hmm. just because that looks a lot closer to what I visualized for the entrance to my original bar 2 years ago when mm-hmm. we started this podcast. That's what I wanted it to look like, was just like a static head who, you know, because the cartoon head moved and it talked.
Mm-hmm.
It was just something that had just a big booming voice and you could see the light from within and it was kind of connected to the ground where the teeth were coming out. And it looked more like a cave.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I'm thinking this bar, to be respectful, does not open until evening time.
Sundown, right?
We could even say sundown, because that would be the best. I think the most culturally appropriate.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
That it didn't open until sundown, which doesn't give you a whole lot of time in some areas of the year. It would be a much longer drinking season in winter than it would be in summer, because I think Epcot closes at 11 most nights.
Okay, so 5 to 11 or 5 to 10 or whatever.
Yeah, and so you can't really get a whole lot of drinking in then, but that might make it an even more popular bar.
Or more digestible for the Moroccan people or the Middle Eastern people who wouldn't see that as a necessarily an eyesore, even like disrespectful because of their cultural beliefs and their choice not to imbibe in certain, you know, beverages.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think we stick with the concept.
Yes, I agree. I think that if it's not broke, don't fix it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's the perfect bar.
Key concepts. We don't need you to go back and listen to the original episode. Mm-hmm. One thing I really liked about our original concept was the idea of like some LED lighting behind some of the walls and in the floor and in the ceilings so that you can see cracks and fissures where lava
the
is
magma
like
coming
threatening
through.
To push through at all times. And obviously there has to be like jewels and all sorts of fun little Easter eggs stuck in the walls and, you know, genie lamp. And
I'm just thinking of Last Call, so that's the roar.
Oh my God, that would be incredible.
The whole place shakes.
You came up with a really good idea.
Oh, I had
in the original bar.
The magic carpet chairs.
The magic carpet chairs, yeah.
We found some really cool, I think there was steel, cast steel chairs, and then we would just basically...
Just cover them in carpet.
Cover them like a, yeah, some kind of tapestry of some kind, or a some kind of threading that would make, kind of have the texture of a carpet itself.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is obviously heavy duty enough to support the weight of anyone who wants to sit in them.
Yes, exactly. And the seating areas would all be like carved into the rock of the place, and the bar would probably be a bit of that big rock pillar that the lamp is on top of.
Stalactites and shit.
Yep, stalactites, stalagmites, all that stuff. You know, there might be an Iago parrot animatronic. Don't know how he got in there, but speaking of which, it says only one may enter, right? Mm-hmm. And Aladdin gets to go in with Abu.
Okay.
So that's two.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
But okay, so we just count Aladdin as one. If we just count Aladdin as one, then why the hell didn't Jafar just send Iago in to get the damn lamp?
Well, if you think about the rock part of that movie, when he was carrying the lamp and then he ended up going back to a normal parrot, the lamp was too heavy for him. He started falling.
Damn it. That's a good point. That's a very good point.
But if you want to expand on the Cave of Wonders thing, obviously you said only one may enter, but Abu goes in.
Yeah.
And he says, do not touch any of the forbidden treasure. Like, dude, Aladdin's touching the treasure as he's climbing that fucking pillar to get up to goddamn to the lamp.
But what sets the lava off is not the one.
No.
It's the one who didn't count.
It's the random guy. And where's the light coming from?
Yeah, there should be
no light.
That
lights up the lamp?
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah, there seemed to be some mysterious magical lighting going on in there. But we are talking about the Cave of Wonders here, so I guess it
could be. We're also talking about Disney movie. We're just like nitpicking every last thing.
But anyway, yeah, golden scarabs, queen's bracelet, you know, all the Easter eggy things in the bar.
Things that have to be there.
Let's make some cocktails, shall we?
I absolutely agree. How many do you have this time?
I have five. How many do you have?
I have five, but one of them is a flight. Okay. And it's a two-parter. Each has three. So if you do the math, I think I have 10 total.
Okay.
But with the flight, I'm not going to go into details of the ounces because there's really no point. But
I think that's 11, but you know, it's late at night, so math is hard.
Six? No, because...
Six and five is 11.
Six and... Well, it's five total, right? But the fourth one is six.
One of them is a flight.
Yes.
I got it. Okay. I thought you had five plus the flight.
Math is hard.
It is. We've been drinking for a while. Have to forgive me. So since you have five and I have five, who gets to start?
I'm going to start us off.
Okay, excellent.
I'm going to start us off only because I'm on a roll, and this is my favorite Disney movie.
That's true.
All right, I'm going to start off with my Arabian Nights, which is my version of a citrus mojito, compliments of Schweppes. This is a riff or a inspiration from one of their cocktails on their website, but of course I took it and make it my own. In a cocktail shaker, add a half ounce of a de-stoned nectarine, 4 mint leaves, a quarter ounce of orange water, muddle. Add 2 ounces of arak, which is a West Asian Levantine spirit, basically like a star anise, like a black licorice kind of flavor, right?
Okay. I'm glad you expounded because I had no idea what that was.
You're going to add ice. You're going to shake until well combined. Dump a strain over ice in a rocks glass and garnish with a mint sprig and a Schweppes orange and mango soda water. That is my citrus mojito, my version of a Arabian Night.
Very nice. I like the take on the mojito because I'm not a big fan of mint. Unfortunately, I'm not a big fan of the star anise either.
I'm not either, but
I get it.
With the mint, the soda water, the orange water, it's all really going to kind of mellow it out a little bit.
Yeah.
And mint is a pretty big herb in the Middle East as well.
Yeah, that's true too. My first cocktail I'm going to start out with the Blue Genie. Stoli Orange Vodka, Blue Curacao, Peach Schnapps, Lemon Juice, Sour Mix, and Edible Blue Glitter combined over ice into a gold lamp cocktail shaker, and it's strained into a Poco Grande glass on the rocks.
What's a Poco Grande glass?
It's like a small, squatty little hurricane glass.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about? The hurricane
like
glass?
Like a tulip glass.
It's, yeah, kind of like that, only with a bigger beveled edge at the top.
Okay, I have a visual now. Thank you.
Yeah, it looks like a tulip. Yeah, that's a very good way of looking at it. It's a sparkly blue cocktail, and it is topped with a blue raspberry cotton candy.
Ooh.
Kind of looking like, you know, genie smoke.
Yeah.
Is the thing I'm evoking here.
I see it. I like it.
That's the Blue Genie.
Very clever. My second one is my Diamond in the Rough, which is my version of a Boulevardier, which I've actually heard is a Boulevardier. What is it called?
Boulevardier.
Boulevardier. So I've heard
that's the way I've always heard it.
Both ways, right? But you know what? Either way, it's going to taste delicious. In a mixing glass, add 1.25 ounces of a High West Midwinter Night's Dram Rye Whiskey, 1 ounce of Campari, 1 ounce of a sweet vermouth. Add ice, gently stir until well combined. In a tiger's head glass, over a fresh pressed diamond ice cube, you're going to strain the mixture and garnish with a orange peel branded with a stripe of a tiger.
Oh, very nice.
So that is my diamond in the rough.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Kind of like a Campari Manhattan.
It's very similar to that.
Very nice. Yes. Yeah, no, I like that a lot. My second drink I'm going to call the Selfish Wish. I have 3 wishes here.
Okay.
My Selfish Wish is Stoli Vodka, St. Germain Elderflower Liqueur, Goldschlager, and Gold Edible Glitter. It is shaken in a gold lamp cocktail shaker. Then you add Prosecco, and it is strained into a coupe glass on the rocks, topped with an egg white foam and edible gold glitter, with maybe a cherry on top. Small little cherry on top.
That's fucking awesome.
That is my first wish, my Selfish Wish.
Nice.
So with the Goldschlager, the gold flakes in there, the gold edible glitter in the cocktail makes it a sparkly gold cocktail, the gold edible glitter on top of the egg white foam. All about being selfish, all about being rich, being a prince. That's my selfish wish.
I like that a lot.
Thank you.
My third drink I call the Night of the Harvest, which of course I did this for my concept bar, but you know what? Doesn't really matter because it is a starfruit gin fizz. And to me, that's the only time I ever see them drinking. Remember the time where the genie and Aladdin were sitting there and they kind of toast up to the sultan who's funny, looking at them like, I think he likes me. If you look at the cocktail, it's a Leopold glass with a starfruit slice on it.
Oh, no kidding.
So I made my version of this to kind of reminisce and actually probably look a lot like, which I'm assuming this cocktail was. In a cocktail shaker, add 1.5 ounces of Hendrick's Lunar Gin, 1 ounce of a passion fruit juice, 1 ounce of starfruit juice, 3 drops of a lemon bitters, add 1/4 ounce of grenadine, ice, shake until frothy, double strain into a coupe Leopold glass, top with a starfruit fruit slice on the rim, finished with soda water and edible flowers. Showing the botanical gardens, starfruit slice, red drink. That's my harvest, my Night of the Harvest.
Beautiful. You could even make that as a non-alcoholic drink, and I think that would be great.
Absolutely could. Just the juices themselves, and then chop it with soda water. Pretty easy to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Here's a foreign contaminant real quick, right in the middle of cocktail section, which is a little bizarre for us. But you often say double strain.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, you say it a lot.
Yes.
And I'm not 100% sure people know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Because when you're straining, when you're cocktail straining, you will turn a glass upside down into your cocktail shaker and you will strain it.
Yes.
If you do that, you're just basically straining the ice out of it, but you're not taking any chunks of fruit or pulp or anything like that out of it. So you strain it through a strainer while you're straining it. That's what you mean by double strain, right?
Yes and no. So if I'm doing like a fresh starfruit juice, for example, sometimes you could have leftover sediments or like the cells or like even some parts of the flesh himself would be part of it.
Yeah.
The part of double straining for sure, the liquid is the thing that's going through. If you were to strain just out of the shaker itself, the holes are very large. So some of those pieces can kind of go through. The process of double straining for sure is alleviating any potential for it. I want it to be so smooth and so clear and so without any debris. That's why the double strain is so important for this drink.
Okay. Sorry for the double straining foreign contaminant, everybody.
Yeah.
But when I was thinking double strain, when you shake it, you build it in like a pint glass, right? And then you put the shaker over top of it.
Okay.
And you do your little shaky thing and you take the shaker off the top.
Yes.
Your liquid is now in the shaker.
Yes.
You turn the pint glass upside down and put it inside the shaker and you would strain the liquid out that way. That way you get the ice out of it. What you're saying is you have the liquid in the cocktail shaker and you put your cocktail strainer over top of it.
Yep. And I pour it over top of a colander or a strainer, a small strainer.
An even finer mesh strainer so that it's double strained.
Exactly. Mesh strainer, which double strained, which allows filter it throughout and then you have no sediment inside the actual drink.
Excellent. I've just had some comments on that before. People were wondering what double straining was.
Oh.
Just wanted to clarify real quick. That's what the double strain is.
I've got to clear that up.
So moving on to my third cocktail, I call it the Life Wish. This is my wish number 2. This is made with Bacardi coconut rum, Midori melon liqueur, blue curacao, pineapple juice, sour mix, and edible blue glitter. This one is also shaken in a gold lamp cocktail shaker, and it is strained on the rocks into a coupe glass. It is topped with an egg white meringue with an aquamarine sugar sift on top, and then probably a little cherry on top. So this one is my deep bluish green drink.
Mm-hmm.
Sparkly, of course, because all of them are so far. that come out of the lamp anyway. You know what I'm talking about when I say strain out of the lamp?
Yeah.
So we're pouring this into like a genie lamp and then it comes out the end.
Yeah, like a teapot, but it's a shape of a genie lamp.
Yeah, exactly. So this is my bluish green cocktail. This is my life wish because this is the wish that brings him back basically from the dead. But genie can't do that. No, it doesn't.
No.
Sorry. This is the wish that saves his life from drowning.
Sure.
From Jafar pushing him into the ocean.
Which you could have totally saved him because, you know, you don't need a wish to...
He absolutely did not have to waste a wish on that.
Some gray area there, too.
The genie got him out of the cave without a wish.
That's true.
He can do all sorts of stuff without a wish. He was doing all sorts of stuff this entire time without a wish. And genie, this particular time, he had to have a wish.
You are wildly irregular here.
Yeah,
wildly inconsistent.
Not sure what the rules are in Genie Land, but they don't seem to be consistent at all.
You're allowed one mulligan, apparently.
But that's my wish number two, my life wish.
Well, now I'm going to have to go into my flight.
Okay.
I call it three wishes.
Oh, very nice.
But I do three wishes for good and three wishes for evil. So my good version, of course, I do a tequila, peach schnapps, blue curacao, pineapple juice, and sour mix, which is the beginning stage, which is a dark blue, which is what Genie had his complexion because he was in the Cave of Wonders.
Very nice.
My second one is an ocean vodka, blue curacao, lime juice, soda water, which is a light blue drink. And of course, you need to have a little cherry on top. And of course, my final one, which is a Blue Island Pucker, lemon lime soda, lemon juice, and a cotton candy served with, of course, a little bit of a maraschino cherry served on top.
We are so on the same page.
We had to point out the whole, that's my cherry on
top.
That's
my little cherry on top.
I don't know how I feel about that, Will Smith.
Do we need the top knot?
Did you need the top knot? So that was my good three wishes, my evil three wishes, which are the best. This is my version of a Negroni, which is a Campari gin and sweet vermouth, garnished with an orange slice and a cobra stir straw, but I want the stir straw, which is in the shape of a cobra, obviously. Once it touches the liquid, the eyes glow.
Oh, interesting.
My next one is a bourbon of any kind, probably like your Woodford Reserve, your Maker's Mark, your Old Forester, which is one of our favorite candy style whiskeys. Bitters, you'd put a little bit of a sweet vermouth, some Mandarin and Grand Marnier. And then I'm going to top it with a salt and hat garnish, which is, of course, a reminiscent of him becoming Sultan, which is his second wish. It's essentially a sweet Manhattan. And then my third one is the time that he asked to become a genie. It's tequila, of course, a little bit of sage, blackberry, simple syrup with orange bitters, lemon juice, and I want a dry ice put in the bottom to bubble, reminiscent to him becoming the most powerful being in the universe.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Love that. And the best part about those is each one of them could be strained into a shot glass and done as a shot.
Yep, that's true.
A shot flight.
But I want them served on a genie lamp. One's gold for the good, and then the evil one is going to be black and red.
The black lamp. Oh, that's nice. I like that a lot. So finishing up with the wishes, obviously you knew this one was coming. Wish number three is called the Freedom Wish. This is Woodford Double Oak Bourbon, orange juice, just a little bit, cinnamon bitters, a muddled fig, and brown and gold edible glitter becoming like a brass color. Brass. 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 This is shaken in a gold lamp cocktail shaker, surprise, surprise, and strained on the rocks into a coupe glass. This one is topped with an egg white foam and brass-colored edible glitter. This is obviously representative of Genie's lamp and his freedom. That's why we call it the Freedom Wish, wish number three.
It's fantastic. You've leaned really hard to the Genie thing so far. It's been your theme.
Yeah.
But like, they sound so great. You know what I mean? They sound like they're all delicious. But even more than that, they're all different. They're so all different.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I tried. They're kind of themed with the bar because I was going with the Cave of Wonders.
Sure.
And I had other cocktails in mind, but I wanted to stick with kind of like the magical theme.
So my last drink is my favorite. And this is important for three main reasons. Number one, I like to always make a drink for you. So this is your drink.
Oh, yay.
Number two, this is a throwback to the original because I made a drink very similar, but a little bit different now. And what's more important, I think, is that now I'm going to give you the ounces so you know how to fucking make it.
Excellent.
This is my thieves compensation, which is my version of a date old fashioned.
Oh.
So you're going to take a sandalwood plank, which we found out is a wood that's very popular, or at least more prominent, I would say, in the Middle East.
Yep.
You're going to torch it, top it with a rocks glass after you have done a brown sugar torch inside of it for the sands around Agrabah.
So I'm trying to visualize this. So we put the brown sugar on the plank and brulee the sugar and then put the glass over it?
What I'll do is I'll put the brown sugar inside the actual rocks glass. We will use a torch to essentially a brulee, but you know...
You're going
to
torch the sugar inside the glass.
Inside the glass. And then you torch the sandalwood plank board and then you put the glass over top, which is going to smoke the inside of the glass.
I got it.
From there, of course, you'll add in a mixing glass, 2 ounces of an Old Forester 1910 bourbon, 1/2 ounce of a date and fig simple syrup, 1 Jaffa orange slice, which is very popular, of course, in the Middle East. You're going to mix very gently gently with a spoon. You're going to transfer at room temperature into the lowball glass that has been smoked. You're going to garnish it with a sugar to date on a monkey tail skewer. So, of course, no ice because there's no ice in Agrabah. And it is a sugar date because thieves' compensation, what did they get paid for all the things they stole?
A bag of dates. Or bags of dates, bags apparently. Of dates. That bothered me too.
A little bit.
Okay, wait a minute. Hold on. Love the cocktail. That sounds freaking delicious, and I can't wait to try one. That was amazing. Thank you very much for thinking of me. And you're right, that was right up my alley. But why are the thieves getting paid? Does the pawn shop pay people in dates?
I don't know. Maybe it's hard to come by. Maybe only certain people are allowed to farm or to raise or to garden dates.
I mean, I understand barter was kind of a form of currency, but were dates the form of currency?
And dates, that's a high sugar content. Your teeth will rot out of your fucking mouth so fast. Like, wouldn't they?
Dates and figs have got to be relatively high when it comes to barter value.
You can't survive on dates alone, though.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Right?
That's why you steal bread.
That's why you
steal
bread.
And he's always got apples in his pocket. Did you notice the prominence of apples in this movie?
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
They're flipping everywhere.
Were there apples prominent in there?
There were apples all over the damn place. Like, yeah. He originally like replaces the bracelet with the apple, and the princess has got like a pile of apples in her palace, and like they just keep cropping up. Everybody, the next time you watch the movie, focus on the apples. See how many times they come up. Make it a drinking game. Every time you see an apple, take a shot.
Or dangerous.
My last drink is called the Red Genie. So I started out with Blue Genie, then we did the Wish, 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 and Red Genie is what I'm finishing on. This drink is a combination of Stoli Raspberry Vodka, Chambord Black Raspberry Liqueur, Cranberry Juice, Jägermeister, Grenadine, and Red Edible Glitter. This one is shaken in a black lamp cocktail shaker and strained on the rocks into a Poco Grande glass. We went over that one in the very first one. And topped with a red raspberry cotton candy. He gets no cherry on top.
That's a good ending.
Thank you very much.
That's a really good ending. I'm starting to think, because I used to work at a place that had, we called it a flirtini, which is like basically just a martini glass, but it got served one and then you had an extra in the reserve. So you had two drinks when you bought it every time. What if like every time you got served these drinks that you've made, instead of just the bartender making it in the genie glass and serving it, which is like kind of cool, but at the same time, what if they got served with the genie lamp and they had two drinks in one? So they had the genie lamp as a side, and they said, okay, here you go. Now take it to your table. And then they're able to have two martini glasses essentially full of drinks.
Okay, now I follow you. I was having a difficult time following you. Okay. It's kind of like, you know, everybody, when you go to a martini bar and they will serve you a martini, but you will also get the martini shaker on the side that has the excess martini in it. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. You get the lamp that comes to your table and you get to pour your own drink kind of deal.
Yes.
But there is the problem with the garnish. So you have to be poured the drink first.
I guess. But yeah.
And then the garnish, and then you've probably got the excess in the lamp, because I think it should be served with the lamp. That would be fun.
I mean, I think so.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
It's all part of the aesthetic.
I am really happy we got to talk about this movie. Do you think it turned out well?
I hope so, honestly, because we got a chance to talk about it. It's almost like a revisit to episode one. We got to talk about things that we didn't get a chance to talk about when we first recorded.
Yeah, we got to add some stuff that was missing. We got to talk about some stuff that we didn't get to talk about. I still don't think we covered 100% of the bases, but
probably,
you know,
not, no.
We covered the majority of it, and we got to talk about your favorite Disney movie of all time.
Yes, revisited in a way. Not my favorite, but for sure.
Exactly. And definitely this 2019 remake was one of my favorite Disney movies. It was absolutely fun, infinitely rewatchable. And I had a really good time recording this episode.
I did too. The first time, of course, we are actually dipping our toes into the live action pool that is Disney.
The very first time, yep. And we've been busting open a lot of doors recently. Opened the Pixar door quite some time ago.
Yes, we did.
But now we're going into live action remakes. We're going to start to do some, what did we do? Some Lucasfilm recently.
We did.
And we're going all over the place for this one. And it was fun to do a live action remake. I can't wait to do more of them.
I think the foot's on the pedal and we are full throttle, and we're going to be just bringing you guys as much great content as we can possibly do.
Absolutely. 100% agree. And so I think that's a wrap on the past, cast, present, and future of the live action version of Aladdin. We want to thank you very much for listening, and let's all thank Lance for all of his hard work. And we would personally like to thank the Ascertainers Podcast. Let's spell that right, ASC. Not ASS. Ascertainers Podcast. Mark and Jim, a couple of really great guys, just had Lance and I on for a crossover episode. Well, no, we were just guests.
We were just guests. And they called it their dojo, which is like their...
Yeah, there was like one weight.
Dojo is what they called it.
They had one weight in the corner. It wasn't a dojo.
Well... It's like it was their area in which they recorded. And
yes, they let us into their personal space, and we got to have a couple of great conversations. We recorded two episodes with them.
We did.
So go check out the Ascertainers podcast. There's a couple of Think Drink Disney episodes if you want to hear more of Lance and I. And hopefully you can get addicted to Jim and Mark as well. A couple of guys shooting the shit, just talking about music and musical stuff, just having a good time as guys just having beers. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, just go check out the Ascertainers podcast. Mark and Jim, a couple of great guys. We appreciate them very much. If you want to support us and the show, you could give us a rating, review, or a thumbs up. You can also find us on the Think Drink Disney community Facebook page, and you can ask to join. And just like that, I think our time together has come to an end. We put out new episodes every other Tuesday, and so until then, it's me, Matt G, reminding you all to learn from yesterday, drink responsibly today, and have a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. Fuck. Floaty Smurf. Fuck. Fuck me. Innuendo in a Disney
That's
movie.
That's a pussy joke.
Nips.
Fucking, God fucking damn it. Oh, yes. Wait. That'd have been really fucking funny. Fuck yeah, they do. I gotta say that again because I fucking didn't. Fuck. Fuck is his goddamn name?
I can't remember. I don't remember his name.
Because fuck everyone else. Like, so many fucking times, Matt. What the fuck? Gigantic fucking bird. Almost had a cock glass. Hakim essentially was the captain of the guards in the Disney version, the 1992 animated feature as well. Hakim really didn't have a standalone.
They were both Disney versions, but yeah.
What's that?
I said they were both Disney versions, but I know what you're saying.
I think I said animated though, didn't
I? You said Disney version, but it's fine. Let's not argue, Lance. Let's be friends.
I want you to, okay, here's the thing. After you do the editing, you're going to look back and I said animated feature too.
Okay.
I did edit.
It's going in the bloopers now.
Heard that?
You did this to yourself,
and then
buddy.
I want you to have a post credit, be like, I apologize.
And yeah, this is future like, Matt. I fucked up.
This is where he knew he fucked up.